sunny and warm today, a high of 83. Here are the new numbers, 84% humidity, wind west at 9, 72 in Kenosha, 71 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. It's fantastic to welcome back into our studios our good friend Nan Calvert, who joins us, of course, on a monthly basis to bring to us, first of all, a topic related to the environment, to the natural world around us, and almost always brings with her as well a guest or two or three. In this case, a guest that she is very, very excited about, and I will let her introduce Marissa Jablonski to you in a moment. First, Nan Calvert, we welcome you back to the morning show.
I am so happy to be here. Thanks, Greg.
And I know you are really, really excited about the guest that is with us in the studios. Tell us about your first encounter with Marissa Jablonski and your first encounter with the work that she does with Freshwater Collaborative.
Well, it was some weeks ago, and I tuned in and came in the middle of sort of a panel discussion interview kind of a thing on public radio, and they were talking about the Freshwater Collaborative of Wisconsin, and Dr. Jablonski was part of the discussion, and I had never heard of this group before. And so as soon as I got back to my laptop, I looked it up, and I thought, oh my gosh, she needs to be on the show. This is exciting stuff. This is big stuff for Wisconsin, and it's big on a global level as well. So you have this large body of institutions, if you will, that are the university system, 13 universities in the system, business and industry, local communities, and other organizations that have come together to look at the 10 grand challenges that face freshwater in Wisconsin. But the work doesn't only impact Wisconsin, because water is everywhere, and it connects us all, fresh water. And so it has a global impact as well. And I thought, wow, this is really exciting. And Dr. Jablonski was so gracious in agreeing to come on the radio and talk about what the Freshwater Collaborative does. But she, we've already discovered in having a conversation that she's going to be coming back to talk about something that she's been involved in for a while that's also extremely important, and that's plastics and plastic pollution. So that'll be a different show. For now, we're going to talk about their freshwater collaborative. So yes, I'm so happy you're here. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, Dr. Jablonski, tell us a little bit about where you come from originally, where you're from, and a little bit about how your interest in the natural world and in particular water sort of first emerged.
I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, so just north of here, and was raised in Elm Grove. My parents still live in that original house. And I say that my environmentalism was born with me. My first memory ever was standing on the shores of Lake Michigan, just east of where we are, but a little north, with my family and looking out and saying, oh my goodness, this is really important to our lives. This water is gigantic. It was the biggest thing I'd ever seen. And I could tell that it was central to everyone's life. And as I grew, that kept getting reinforced in my life, right? My first Earth Day was in kindergarten, and I tell this story, but I was 5 years old and learned about composting, came home to my family, looked up at my dad, who had been 36 at the time, and said, why do we throw our food waste in a landfill? And he said, I didn't know we throw our food waste in the landfill. What should we do? And I said, we should be composting. He said, well, how do we build a compost?
And this is a kindergartner.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And we were, you know, privileged enough that we had some encyclopedias at home. We looked up composting and then went to the library, looked up, you know, how do we do this? We built one that day and it's still in use today. You know, many, many years later, my sister composts, I compost, and we're spreading environmental messages just by living and walking the walk.
Wow. Very good. I assume this is something you studied.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit about where you went and what was available at that point in time.
Yeah, of course. So my undergrad is from UW-Stevens Point. I have an undergrad in environmental science and Spanish. It was a double major. Because when people would say, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? I said, work with planet Earth and clean planet Earth. And so that was a natural fit. I have to be honest, I was really good at math and I didn't have to learn all that much math. So I had to learn ecology and biology. There was math and chemistry. I did really well in those classes. But I struggled with the true environmental classes. So when I went back to grad school, it was for engineering because I loved that math and I wanted to make decisions, not just react. Well, it turns out most of our society reacts to environmental problems rather than kind of tries to tip them off before they happen. So we're still always dealing with that. That's one of the things the Freshwater Collaborative tries to do is get ahead of issues, and that's through research and education. But anyway, so then my master's and my PhD were from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee in environmental engineering. And during those 3 degrees, I also focused on very global issues. So I started traveling during my undergrad. I studied abroad in Spain and in Poland and all throughout Europe and studied environmental issues and urban planning with an environmental lens. And then when I got to grad school, I started writing grants and traveling back and forth to India to do wastewater treatment on textile dye wastewater and work in China. And then after that, I taught in a peacebuilding program at UWM for a couple of years because of all the field work I'd done. And then I worked in environmental policy in Washington, D.C. for just a few years and traveled all over the globe, hit almost all the continents. But we focused most on Asia, Central America, and the continent of Africa.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So tell us about the siren call back to your home state of Wisconsin. Yeah.
Well, I always say that things align and there are certain things you cannot fight, right? So this is just pre-pandemic. We saw it coming through the continent of Asia and everyone in DC was talking about COVID and how it was happening. And at that time, I was applying for new positions. My fellowship, I was with the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS. They put out Science Magazine actually every week. And I was working there. My contract was up. And so I was looking for continuation, continuing contracts and other work. And everything I looked for fell through, and in not obvious ways. They were really tricky. Like, I would send emails to different companies, and then I would follow up with a phone call the next day, and they would say, we never got your email. And I would look in my sent box, and it was sent. So it was very, very strange. At the same time, I had applied and was going through the process with the Freshwater Collaborative at UW-Milwaukee, and it was really working, right? Mm. So I had packed up and was heading home. I got home March 1st. The pandemic hit, and we were in shutdown March 15th. And by April 1st, I knew I had this position.
Wow.
So it was like the stars aligned. And I love Wisconsin. I love Milwaukee. I love the whole world, but really, this is my home. And so I have this saying every time I travel, because I would go to India for 3 months at a time. But I would always look at my parents and say, don't worry, I'll be home. I'll come home, I promise. And so it feels really good to be rooted here with this global perspective.
Right. That's one thing I just want to follow up briefly, and then we'll get right into Freshwater Collaborative. But talk for a moment about the value of having been in other places and having confronted some of these issues and questions in other places where probably there are fundamental things that are the same, but a lot of specifics that are very different. So what are some ways in which that has been really helpful to you in terms of the work you're doing now?
Yeah. I have traveled to 45 countries on the planet, and I can honestly say that people are people are people are people. No matter where you go, they all have the same priorities and same thought processes and same needs and many times same desires. And so having that perspective and understanding what's going on with climate change, with water challenges, with plastics pollution, and understanding that we are truly privileged to live not only in the United States, where we have a really decent economy that we can depend on a regular basis, but also to live next to, in the Midwest, next to the largest source of fresh water on the entire planet. It's absolutely remarkable. So the issues that we see across the globe, we suffer less in the Midwest than anywhere else. So it's a pain point as much as it's a joy to live here, right? Because many times I look around our communities and not everyone takes the issues seriously, right? When we have a couple degrees hotter day in Wisconsin, it's nothing compared to what's happening in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, where people are dying, right? We've had that on a very small scale in Wisconsin, you know, when we had some power outages, I think it was last summer, the summer before, for days, and people really suffered. But the extent to which it's happening isn't there. And it's really interesting, but a handful of years ago, Pakistan had a extreme weather event where many of their bridges were taken down naturally. I mean, it was an extreme weather event. And I remember hearing that the government came to the countries with the largest CO2 and carbon emissions. And they said, okay, now when are you going to fix our bridges? And the countries like the United States, like China, said, excuse me? And Pakistan said, well, it's carbon emissions that create these extreme climate issues that tumbled our bridges and have killed our people and have flooded our lands. So when are you going to fix our bridges? I mean, I'm sure they did it more diplomatically than I just explained, but it was genius because we're all in this together and we've got to start thinking globally. Even though we act locally and we are located in Wisconsin, we are a part of a gigantic earth system, right? We have one water, one air, one soil, and we share it. We know that coal-burning power plants in China, land, trickle coal, soot, let's say, or air pollution on the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. There's no stopping that, right? We can't put up a wall in the air. It doesn't work that way. And so how can we work with China to say thank you for being developed and for creating energy for your people? And how can we work together to grow our own renewables and their renewables and be a part of a global system?
Mm. Whew. There's a lot to explore here today, and this is already quite exciting. For those of you just joining us, this is Nan Calvert's monthly visit to the morning show. Her very special guest joining us, Dr. Marissa Jablonski, who is with Freshwater Collaborative. Are you, I forget, I didn't write down your specific position.
I'm the executive director.
Okay, I thought you were executive director, and so we are talking now about specifically the work of Freshwater Collaborative, which, of course, as Dr. Jablonski has just been spelling out, is primarily concerned with fresh water, but of course that taps into all kinds of other issues, and their scope ultimately is really beyond the borders of Wisconsin. When we visit the beautiful website of the Freshwater Collaborative, one of the first things we're told is about the partnership between Freshwater Collaborative and Wisconsin's 13 public universities. So let's begin there. And is that kind of first and foremost what your organization is about?
Yes, we're a UW system initiative that brings together all 13 UW universities. There's 13 universities and 26 campuses across Wisconsin. And we all have versions of water programs. Right. And so the Freshwater Collaborative was started to bring them all together so that we can share courses and expertise for everyone to benefit. So our dream is to bring a student to Wisconsin. That student can choose any major, any water major, anywhere in the system that really gets them excited. Let's say they choose to study the Mississippi River in La Crosse, UW La Crosse. And then they're a sophomore and they look around and say, well, wait a second. Doesn't Wisconsin have 15,000 lakes? And aren't they a part of this great lake system? I want to go study shipping in Superior. So they can take a summer or a short course and they can go up to Superior with the assistance of the Freshwater Collaborative and take a course and become at least a micro expert about Lake Superior for a short period of time, and then go back to La Crosse. And it will feel to them as if they never left La Crosse. They'll experience Superior, but they'll pay their La Crosse tuition. They will have their housing paid for so that they can, you know, not sacrifice anything, basically just gain, right? And then later on, if they want to understand Lake Michigan, they could study at Green Bay for a short course, or Milwaukee. Or we're creating a course with Parkside, Milwaukee, Oshkosh, Green Bay, and Superior to take a boat course. It's about a two-week trip all the way up the Michigan coast, the Lake Michigan coast, all the way across to Superior. So we're creating these statewide programs that benefit everyone, right?
So at most of the, I suppose at all 13 public universities in Wisconsin, one can study about water to various degrees. So at some of those universities, can you actually sort of major in water? I mean, can it be that much of a all-enveloping focus of their studies?
Definitely. So I'm thinking of UW-Stevens Point has a water resources major that's been around for a long time. They specialize in groundwater and river water and streams and you know, small water bodies, because that's what is especially strong in Stevens Point. You can study water, get a water major at UW-Milwaukee from the School of Freshwater Sciences, and they also help you specialize in water policy, which is special to Milwaukee and Madison. You can study limnology at Madison, which is really the study of water, you know, surface water. Green Bay has a really strong water program and environmental program. So definitely, yes, this is a major. And what we found when we polled corporations and companies and industry in the area is that they want to hire people who understand the connectivity of water and who understand how to work with water so they can see the impact of their industry on the natural environment. And regulations are increasing because we are running out of clean, fresh drinking water, for instance. And so industry has to be more aware of their impact on the natural environment. And so a major or a minor or a certificate in water could help people get hired right now today.
Wow. Because of that, again, that interconnectedness with other issues
exactly.
and so on.
Yes.
And it's just increasingly important. That's probably one way to answer one of the most intriguing questions that is on your website. At some point, the simple question, why study water?
There it is.
And I suppose, you know, you've just touched on that. But of course, beyond that, is water is one of those things that we so take for granted, and yet in and of itself is such a fascinating thing, and there's so much to explore. Give us some sense of that.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I want to say is when we started the Freshwater Collaborative, one of the first things we did was talk with Native tribal members throughout Wisconsin and understand how they see water. And one of the things that was explained to me nicely, but firmly, as it should be, is that they don't consider water as a resource, because the resource implies that it is for our use as human beings. And they consider water as kin. And when we think about kin, like think about a child or a cousin or someone related, right? We don't love that person because they are useful. We love that person because they are. And so the first thing when we think about water is just to understand that it is. And we love it. And we need it to survive. And so when we think about water systems and the health of our water systems, it is their health is directly related to our health. And we can think of, I can think of two grand water challenges off the top of my head. Think of lead pipes in cities like Milwaukee. Think of PFAS emissions in water systems in Eau Claire. Those are both things that humans have done to poison, in a way, our drinking water and natural water systems as well. And then when you look at what's going on, like with PFAS, well, that directly impacts the entire natural environment, which would then impact other things that are useful for us, but also just really inherently important for the natural environment to thrive.
So in other words, when we're thinking about safeguarding our water, we are already then, even if inadvertently, thinking about safeguarding other aspects of the natural world around us.
And isn't that beautiful?
Well, that sounds a lot like something Nan Calvert talks about once in a while,
like
which
every
is
show.
Yes, right, the interconnectedness of everything. I'm sure a lot of this is music to your ears.
It is. You know, I wanted to say that there's an emphasis now, or a focus, just recently on PFAS and PFOS, PFAS, and for good reason. Would you like to talk about that just a little bit?
Sure. So PFAS, some people call it PFAS, PFAS, PFOA. These are chemicals. They're called forever chemicals. And they have been discovered in water systems throughout the world, not just the United States, not just Wisconsin, to be clear, but they're found in nonstick chemicals, so your nonstick pans. They're found in fire retardant foam that the firefighters use. They're found in nonstick floss for your teeth, and it's all these non-stick things, right? So it's a handy chemical that helps us do certain things. However, it is extremely harmful. So it's a forever chemical, meaning it never goes away. So we are just learning about it. I think the first time I heard about it was a couple years ago, really, and it started making national news about a year ago. Well, it travels in clouds and is very unpredictable and acts very, very differently than other contaminants that we're more accustomed to, like lead. Lead is pretty predictable. We know how, you know, if you have a lead lateral coming to your house with your drinking water, you run your tap for 2 minutes, cold water, and that rinses out any residual in your pipes, and you're good to go. If you're really concerned, filter using, you know, carbon, charcoal, some silver will get all other kind of contaminants out, and you can drink your water. When it comes to PFAS, they are much, they swarm. And so scientists across UW system, I know Rebecca Clapper, Dr. Rebecca Clapper at UWM is studying, her lab studies PFAS, and there are many others, and the Freshwater Collaborative is actually, we've put some funds to the side that, and we're using those funds now to specifically fund about 5 research projects across the state of Wisconsin. And it's to study what's going on, so research where they are and how they travel and how to mitigate them, how to absorb them, how to get them out of our water, out of our bodies, out of the natural systems that exist. They're very, very scary. Yeah.
So those are, I know, mentioned on your website when you talk about these 10 grand water challenges. So first of all, before we just talk through what those 10 are, just kind of talk about overarchingly what they represent.
Yeah, when we think about what we were just discussing, so the health of our water and the health of our lives, then think about anything that would challenge that health. Right? So I'll just go through them. Agricultural water management. We know that in Kewaunee County in Wisconsin, for instance, there is a challenge going on between agriculture and large-scale farming and health of water. So up in Kewaunee, we have CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations. These are large-scale animal operations that are seated on top of karst topography. Karst rock is like Swiss cheese. So when the animals poop, then it rains and it snows, and that water infiltrates the manure through that Swiss cheese bedrock, and it goes right into the aquifer. Then when the people turn on their taps, manure water comes out. So that means in their shower, that means in their kitchen sink. Well, that is a grand water challenge. There's not one human I've ever met in 45 countries that wants to drink manure water. I know I don't. So how can we work together to mitigate that, work with those owners, the agricultural workers, and with scientists to say, okay, how do we work on this? Then we've also got industrial water engineering and technology. So when we think about water that comes out of industry, is it clean? Is it dirty? What kind of filters do you need? What kind of sensors do you need to help do that kind of work? Then water quality, safety, and emerging contaminants. PFAS fits into there. So knowing that we have emerging contaminants. We didn't know about pharmaceuticals in our drinking water until somebody thought to test for it. There's a tricky thing in water engineering. We can't test for something we don't know we're looking for. So we have to work together with society to say, you know, what are people flushing down their toilets and why? Then you get, you know, Great Lakes water management and restoration, water infrastructure, water business and finance, watershed management and restoration. That's a neat one because of the recent Supreme Court decision with wetlands. And are they now, you know, how is that changing? I don't know all the details with that decision, but I just know that it can bring things to the surface. And then healthy recreation and transportation, and then aquaponics and aquaculture as a couple other examples.
So is this just a means of understanding kind of all of the things that are going on and all of the different avenues there are in order to study and ultimately try to protect our water?
Definitely. When the Freshwater Collaborative decided to really go after state funds, we found that when we were speaking with different legislators, that they were saying, well, what about, right? And the legislators in the state of Wisconsin, they get phone calls about blue-green algae. They get, you know, blue-green algae blooms because maybe a dog dies or maybe someone gets sick because they've had contact with that. Well, they get phone calls about that. They get phone calls about lead pipes, about PFAS. And so when we would go talk to them and ask them for funds, they would say, well, what do you research? And the easiest way to talk about what the entire UW system, 13 universities, researches on water, we put them into 10 categories, the grand water challenges. And it really covers everything from groundwater to drinking water to Great Lakes to mighty rivers and everything in between, including trout streams and everything.
Wow. So, are you dealing with college students that are already interested in this and trying to focus their energies, or is this also about or more about or in addition to it, also about trying to generate more interest? Or by and large, are there a whole lot of young people who already have a pretty healthy concern about this and just need direction in terms of what to do with that concern?
That's an awesome question because it's a yes and answer. So we have many students who are studying water across UW system, and we see an increase in interest in environmental concerns with young people. I've never met a generation of more interested and awakened young people. It's such a relief. They look around and say, well, why would I go to a concert that serves their drinks in a plastic cup? You know, they should be serving in a compostable cup and be collaborating with a local compost company. What? You're 17 and you're thinking this? That's awesome, right? Mm-hmm. So, yes. So we find that there's really high interest in environmental degree programs, and that we're really excited about. And then also we are targeting people who live and work already in communities who would like to come back to school, maybe for a certificate or a specialization. So, for instance, I think about a journalist who may be in the field for, you know, 5-10 years and realize, hey, wait a second, you know, they may write and report on industry and they're saying there's a lot of environmental issues that are impacting industry right now. What if I went back to school to understand environmentalism and water and got, you know, took 3 to 5 classes across the state of Wisconsin and then went back to my job as a journalist to really be able to dive in and ask better questions and explain things more thoroughly and understand the issues?
Yeah. You mentioned before we went on the air at least one example of help that Freshwater Collaborative has given to students at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, our neighbors right up to the north. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Parkside has a really exciting magazine that they published, and it's completely student-run, and it's called Roots. And the Freshwater Collaborative has been able to partially fund this magazine, and it's really neat. So if you're in Kenosha or Racine today and you're listening, stop by UW Parkside and pick up a copy and read what the students are working on. So they talk about their field studies, and they talk about their lab work and talk about, you know, the goings on and what matters and why it matters. It's a really neat publication. And again, I'm an educator through and through. You know, I got to where I am through teaching. I always taught at least a course a semester everywhere I've been. And I love the young people's minds. They often describe society in the future as where everyone wants to be a part of this really integrated, connected society. Well, that's what you can read in Roots magazine. And it was the mentor was Dr. Jessica Orlovsky at UW Parkside, who's a real go-getter and really dynamic and awesome. And if you get her attention and ask her for a tour of her bug lab, she'll do it. She's got some Madagascar cockroaches that are just awesome.
Oh, great. So I know on the website you also talk. So part of what happens is you are, in a sense, helping to facilitate really exciting internships where students are, in a sense, fanning out all across the state of Wisconsin. Doing what? I mean, give a couple of actual examples, tangible examples of the kind of out in the field work that students are doing that Freshwater Collaborative is helping to facilitate.
Well, I would say we have off the top of my head, three different kinds of internships. So the first would be government. So they may get an internship with like USGS, United States Geological Society, where they may be taking data from the field. There's a really good connection between La Crosse and USGS, and there's a laboratory run there that brings in students to do research of water systems that impact the Mississippi River and also fish that are living and breeding there. Hmm. So they would draw that connection and be working in the laboratory and in the field while during a summer program. Another example may be with agriculture. So there's a did you know that kidney beans, that Wisconsin grows more kidney beans and exports more kidney beans than any place in the United States? I didn't know that until we started funding a project that brings students into kidney bean farming. And what they study is the needed irrigation water to optimize growth of kidney beans so that we decrease our over irrigation usage that drains aquifers inevitably. So those students would be doing that analysis and studying the beans while also having an impact on water. And then the third type of project might be a water engineering internship, where they would work with a water engineering firm in the state of Wisconsin and be in the field or in the lab, probably with AutoCAD. It's more technical. Oh, I just thought of a fourth one. The fourth one might be at UW Oshkosh. They have a research lab called ERIC, Engineering Research Innovation Center. And they have a fully functioning chemistry and biological laboratory there. They bring samples, local companies actually pay to have their samples analyzed by students. So a student would, and Dr. Greg Kleinheinz is the head there, and he brings students in from all universities around Wisconsin. I don't know that he's brought them in all at the same time, but they're open to that, and pays students to analyze these water samples. So it's a for-profit center that gives students in the lab and field experience so that when they graduate, they can easily find jobs.
Wow. Amazing. The website also makes mention of funding innovative research, in a sense, in search of solutions. So right. I guess that's part of the piece that we haven't talked about is some of these, in some of these cases, we know exactly what we have to do and have to kind of rally the political and social force to do it. And then in other cases, we're still trying to figure out what do we do about this. What would be an example of a couple of areas in which research is happening right now in search of much needed solutions?
So I'll bring back PFAS, because we just funded about five research projects that are really centered on state-of-the-art research across Wisconsin to find and mitigate PFAS. They bring in undergraduate students to solve the issue together. And what the Freshwater Collaborative is working to do is pull all these five grants together. They're working right now apart from each other, and we're trying to bring them together and say, we're going to create a working group where we have you talk once a month or once every 2 months so that you can discuss as professors, as scientists, as undergraduate researchers, and as graduate researchers, and discuss, okay, what can you learn from each other? Typically, research is done in silos, right? I remember in grad school learning about the discovery of DNA and how there were two scientists across the world from each other working on the same kind of work by chance. They didn't know that each other were working on it. They both published a paper around the same time discovering DNA. And, one got credit and one didn't get credit. And one got a huge prize and one didn't, whatever it is. But it's an extremely, if you can imagine yourself in that situation, there are reasons that people hide their intellectual property. We're saying we are a collaborative and we're better together. So what we are up against is an extremely competitive academic system and saying you don't have to share your IP, but can you come to the table and can we bring this together to help humanity and help the earth? And to be honest, we just gave out $4.2 million to 22 grants, 22 proposals, five of which were PFAS. So we're at the very beginning of bringing these working groups together and just planting the seed to say, will you talk to your peers and your colleagues across the state and discuss these things? You know, we're having a partnering event in Madison on Wednesday, September 27th, at which point we'll introduce this idea. Right. So, now it's on the radio, so it's out. Cat's out of the bag. But the idea that what can that look like and how can we do that so that we don't compete? Another one is phosphorus. Phosphorus, though, is much more collaborative. We're seeing the Center for Water Policy just put on a conference last March in Madison. It's a central location, so that's often the deciding factor. And scientists came from all over the state. Government officials came from all over the state. Students came from all over the state to present their research in poster form and talk about how can we decrease phosphorus in our natural environment because it leads to algae blooms. It leads to pollutants that kill dogs and harm waterways. Hmm. So we're working on it, and it's very exciting right now.
Wow.
What about research on chloride contamination?
Great question. So we see some of it from, you know, sodium chloride salt in our freshwater systems. So that the people that I know are working on that are in Madison mostly. There's a really great nonprofit called Saltwise, and they're doing a lot of research and are collaborating with the university system. Yeah, look at all the salt we're using on our road systems and then how that impacts our freshwater systems. It's a big deal. So we see it, but we see it at a lesser level. Mm-hmm. And that's probably unfortunate. Basically, my explanation and your question leads to how the heck you pick what's important.
Right.
Right? It's all important. Mm-hmm. And that's what we end up running into. We run a grants program in order to disseminate, you know, what we should propose. Or I'm sorry, what we should fund of the, we receive proposals and then we decide what to fund. And it's really tricky. We have a review committee of about six people and we have these discussions all the time. Well, should we fund this or what's higher priority? And it's really a hard choice. Mm-hmm. It's really competitive. So we're also hoping that these working groups can bring these discussion points together and the Freshwater Collaborative can be seen as a hub that creates those discussions, those, you know, it's interdisciplinary discussions and it's collaborative discussions that we need.
So where does this money come from that you are dispersing?
Yes, the state of Wisconsin, the legislature, has given the Freshwater Collaborative $5 million in base funding, which means we get $5 million every 2 years. And we just got our second load of funding, and of that 5 million, we distribute about 4.2 million to the different universities, and we fund projects and programs, collaborative projects and programs. The vast majority, I can't think of an exception this round of funding, the vast majority of projects we fund are two or more campuses. That's a key because we have to start collaborating. We have to start discussing. And we really fund four major things, which is the pipeline to jobs. So high school recruitment projects, camps and other ways to get students involved, getting their waders on and walking through rivers and ponds. And then we fund undergraduate research, just as we've just been talking about. We fund courses and certificate programs to run those programs so that students can take a course from anywhere and it's seamless transfer of credits and finances. And then the fourth is those internships. So we've really covered all four of those things. And yeah, so the legislature is gracious enough and generous enough to give us $5 million every 2 years. And it's really to bridge this understanding and make Wisconsin a hub for studying freshwater.
Are you aware of any organizations comparable to this in other states?
Yes, there's a few. I love the name in Ohio, H2 Ohio. Yep, they got that one. That was a good move, Ohio. Yeah. And they're much broader. They include the Ohio university system and also the government system and industry. So they're much larger than us. There's also a program in Michigan. The name is not so clever. It's that I can't remember it. It's something like Blue Michigan or something. And it's a Michigan university or state Michigan. Now I'm stumbling.
Yeah, it's okay.
But it's something university centered. And then I just learned there's a Florida Water University and something in Washington State. Those two are slightly smaller.
Right. Mm-hmm. How about other organizations that already exist in Wisconsin that are that share your concern? And to any significant extent, are you in contact with other environmental groups that are carrying this banner as well?
Most definitely. We have a list of 141 partnering groups right now.
Wow.
That are working on water issues in and around Wisconsin. So we can't take credit for that. That's 13 universities and 13 university partnerships that have grown over the years, you know, decades, to grow that research, understanding, and collaboration. But they really come from industry, government, nonprofit, and community, including associations, the Lakes and Rivers Associations, everything in between. Yeah, it's phenomenal. The amount of water-focused groups is just incredible.
Well, it's good to know that you know, even as you are encouraging scientists and students and various universities to work in collaboration, that you're trying to embody that right from the start. I mean, even as an organization.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to note that 141 group partners, that means they would all be looking for future employees, right? So there are really opportunities in water. One of the probably most fun conversations I've had in the last 3 years from having this position was talking with an aquaponics and aquaculture for-profit industry up in Stevens Point, and them saying, just so you know, we're growing. So water quality in the oceans is decreasing. We're overfishing the oceans, which means our fish populations are decreasing, which means the way we're, and yet fish consumption is increasing across the globe. So the way that we are growing and fishing has to be in farm situations. And the way to do that in a healthy way is aquaponics and aquaculture, where the fish feces are then recycled back and water, if you will, water and fertilized plants above, you know, and then you grow your tomatoes above, and then the filtered water feeds the fish because it has the nutrients from the soil and from the roots. So it's a circular way. Well, he looked at me, I guess this was early on in COVID, and we were on Zoom, and he said, if you want to make a good investment, make it in aquaponics and aquaculture. I said, I never knew that this job would lead to inside trading advice. Of course, you know, I didn't, because I have no idea where to turn for that stuff. But it's really neat. He said, right now, we turn to UW Stevens Point for all of our employees. Every single employee at this one company came from UW Stevens Point Aquaponics and Aquaculture program. So what a cool opportunity, and how neat to be a part of that.
Yeah. So your organization, of course, makes possible all kinds of students to access these and other opportunities and to understand and then help all of us understand the importance of fresh water. Marissa Jablonski, Executive Director of Freshwater Collaborative of Wisconsin. It's been so great to have you here, and we want to direct people to your organization's beautiful website, which is freshwater.wisconsin.edu, if they want to learn even more about this. And as Nan has already indicated, you're coming back sometime in the relatively near future, and we certainly look forward to that. But in the meantime, thank you for making the trip down from Milwaukee to be part of the morning show today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, and please remember, we're in this together.
Yes.
Very good. Nan, real quick,
okay.
any announcements?
coming to a local focus here. Hawthorne Hollow Nature Sanctuary and Arboretum is having its extremely popular and wonderful Walk in the Woods Art Fair on September 9th from 10 till 4 p.m. It's grown to be one of the most popular and well-respected in southeastern Wisconsin. There will be over 60 artists, ranging from fine art to jewelry to painting, photography, sculpting, everything in between. A $10 donation per vehicle is requested, and all of the proceeds go to support Hawthorne Hollow's fine initiatives. The Racine Dominican Eco Justice Center Discovery Days, where you can learn, make, try, and create, September 16th and 17th from 11 a.m. till 4 p.m. Admission $5 for grown-ups, $3 for kids. Little bitty ones under two are free. What a fun fundraiser this is. There's so many things to do. There's just really dozens and dozens of things that you can choose from. Go to the website, check it out. You can also register to learn how to paint an alpaca because, you know, they have live alpacas there and they get to be the models. Mm. So check that out. And then last but certainly not least, Pringle Nature Center Fall Fun Festival, September 16th. September is a big month. Mm-hmm. From 11 till 3 p.m. The Fall Fun Festival has hay rides, live animals, children's crafts.